down King's Bar.
And right there. Welcome to another episode of that 4K podcast. Dan Vittori here with Larry Davis, our buddy, good buddy Larry, and more importantly, two-time Super Bowl champion Joe Mandetta. We're here at MetLife Stadium for the ending of that 4K conference. John, great to see you finally.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I can tell you that story. We had a teammate that obviously didn't understand what a 401k was. When we went to fill out the papers, he said, "What are you doing?" We asked him why. He said, "Because I'm a receiver. I'm not running 401k." He really just didn't know what it was. It was really funny. It was great.
It reminds me of the of St. Louis. There was a story where Bob Costas was the announcer. I think they were there traveling. The time zone or whatever was changed from, like, I think Tennessee to Ohio or something like that. And the plane was leaving at a certain point and it was arriving on the time zone 3 minutes earlier. Marvin Barnes like, "I ain't going on no time machine."
Money. It was good for the players, obviously. Many NFL players had their contracts improved greatly just because now there was another league to go to, but the television money wasn't great, and I think maybe the USFL owners may have felt that because the first 3 years there was success, there was going to be a bigger television pot, but it was one of those things where the owners just spent too much money, and the ones that benefited from that were the players. Once they made the move to try and compete, that's where it did work. They had a lawsuit. For those who don't remember, it's one of the few times where someone's won a lawsuit and they actually lost. They won, but they were awarded a dollar. And to add insult to injury, they said, "Well, the amount's going to be trebled, so you're going to get $3 there." I haven't seen it. There actually is a check that was written by the NFL to the NFL, USFL, for like $3.30. I'd love to see that one day, but it's a shame. It was a very good league that just didn't work out because of that.
An ESPN documentary, Mike Tillman did, and I remember they showed the check for $3.
In the NFL back then, because I was in another league, I actually was a true free agent, so I could have teams bid on me. And I had three or four teams that were interested, and because of that, I ended up really getting a good contract. I mean, a much, much higher contract than if I would have been drafted in the NFL. So I was really very lucky in that sense. I think that's what opened people's eyes to if there was competition, if there was someone else that could bid on you, what your value would really be worth. So I was lucky to be a free agent. We were talking with Seattle, Dallas, and Washington, and the Giants, and looking back, I'm so happy that I did pick the Giants. I came here at a time where they were getting the team turned around. And
I think your place was
yes.
Perfect.
He ended up being, if I recall, he was a very good announcer. And one of the things that he was excellent about it. He knew the rules. Yeah. You know, he was one of the few guys who really knew all the rules in the game. And really, if something happened to him, he was saying it was right. And then you think about it, right? So the Giants had Jennings, and they went on to Sean Landetta, you know, but was a big, big part of the Giants. And like Sean said earlier, special teams, Bill Parcells, Bill Belichick, very, very important, and a lot of teams don't think that way.
Right. Sean, when you joined the Giants, it was a team on the rise, so that was Parcells'.
Yeah, I think it was his third year.
83 was his first season, 3-12-1, they wanted to fire him. There was a rumor that they got to hire Howard Schnellenberger. Jimmy the Great did it. They went to the playoffs. They beat the Rams in the first round, and then they lost to the 49ers. And then he came around, that was the year they lost to the Bears. Except for the Dolphins, nobody could really touch the Bears. But how was it like to be part of a team that you just knew that there was something good coming out of it?
Well, it was great for me because I had come from a terrific team in the USFL. We'd been to 3 title games, 1-2, and then coming to a Giant team that was good right away. I mean, you always just kind of expect, you think the guys you're with are good players and you're going to win, but it doesn't always happen. There are guys on teams that have 5, 6, 8, 10 years that don't have winning records. So for me to come here right away when they had it turned around was a great thing. A lot of Giant fans would remind me that from the mid-60s till the early 80s, maybe they had 2 winning seasons in like 18 years. And then I come, and right away this team's in the playoffs, and we had a run, and we got to 2 Super Bowls. So timing's very important, and I was really lucky to be here at that time.
63-81, we did not make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, that's
63 champion. I think they were the 63 championship game with the Bears, and then until they had the game against the Eagles, Joe DiMello, when he beat the Cowboys and finally made the playoffs. I mean, for 17, 18 years.
Well, you brought up 1981, so all I think about in 1981 is the Giants drafted probably one of the greatest players ever, both sides of the ball, to play in the NFL, arguably. You can argue all day long that LT Lawrence Taylor is the greatest player, because if you remember, and you know this better than all of us, Sean, they game planned for him. I don't think he ever game planned against the defense. What was it about Lawrence? I'm sure you'll say, God, give him time, but what else? What was his work ethic? What was he like in the locker room with you guys?
First of all, he's a great teammate. Everybody knows what a great player he was, but he treated everybody great because he was such a star. You know, anytime you go out with him in public, you got a feeling like this is what it must have been like for Elvis Presley. Because everywhere he went, people just run up to him. But he was very generous, really good teammate, and just a guy that just had great talent. I think he was much smarter than people give him credit for. He understood offensives. You know, when a guy always seems to be around the ball, talent's important, but you have to know where things are going and how to get there, especially when your opponents are loading up for you. You mentioned about game planning for him. There's no question that all the teams in the NFC East in the 80s were so much better because they drafted and set up to try to deal with Taylor twice a year. But in the meantime, that was helping them beat everybody else. So you look in the 80s, you look at the records of the Redskins, Eagles, Giants, and Cowboys. Cowboys through 87, even still, they were all winning teams. There was a lot of good teams, good games, and a lot of it you can attribute back as teams trying to game plan for one guy.
In that vein, though, we brought up Belichick earlier in the conversation. I mean, Coach Belichick is sort of famous for his ability to take away a team's strength, right? To game plan, to take away their best receiver, whatever it is. This might be a stretch, but sort of putting the pieces together, do you think some of that started in seeing how teams game plan for Lawrence Taylor?
You can make a case for that. You know, he would see what other teams would do to try to stop him, and obviously he's doing the same thing. Every team you're playing is going to have probably an outstanding player, although not as outstanding as Lawrence. Still a guy that you say to yourself, you know what, if we can nullify this guy, it gives our chances of winning greatly go up. So, you know, I know he's 25. Excuse me. He he had a great game plan. You know, I mean, the receivers the Bills had were Hall of Fame receivers with James Lofton and Andre Reed. They had a Hall of Fame quarterback, and the great runner, and the Bills have just been crushing people, scoring points like crazy. And he put a game plan together where maybe Thurman Thomas would run the ball and do well, but the other part of that offense was not going to beat us. And they still scored a point a minute. They had the ball 19 minutes.
I know. Wow.
They had the ball 19 minutes and scored 19 points.
I didn't realize
that. They had the ball 41 minutes and only scored one more point. So. Well, it was such a long drive.
Right.
Yes, if you look at both teams, it's like every player on each team did something to help their team. I know it's been one or two penalties, a clean played game, just a great football game, great football plays on every series and every drive, which if you're a fan, that's why you watch. Obviously, if it's your team in there, you want your team to win by 50. But cool, if you were a football fan, it's like these last several Super Bowls. They've been great Super Bowls. I mean, even if your team wasn't in there, you'd watch that game and you'd be like, wow. There were a number of blowouts back then, and our game there was, I think up to that time, you could make a case the most exciting one.
Yeah, you know,
Sean, so when that happens, Sims goes down. I mean, what are you guys thinking in the locker? What does Parcells say?
You know, it was so different back then than today, because Jeff had been with us for 7 years, and we watched him every day in practice, and we all thought he could do it. He still had to go and prove he could do it. But I think collectively our thought was, regardless of what he does, even if he plays great, if we don't all play great, we won't win. So we all know the quarterback matters, but everyone else still has to play great. So I think, no one really talked about it. We just continued playing, and it was like, Jeff, just go play quarterback the best you can. And if we all play the best we can, and you're pretty good like we think you are, which he turned out to be, we still got a chance to do this. Because the last two games we lost, we won. We literally snatched victory from the jaws of defeat. The NFC title game, I mean, the Niners could have just taken four knees there at the end. They're just running the clock out. They run the ball into the line. The ball pops out. We get it. We go kick a field goal with the game.
First, before that, Leonard Marshall, and I saw Leonard Marshall that show in August, just reminding him that hit.
Broke his back.
Yeah.
He had two or three injuries on that play.
Right.
So, Montana's out of the game. They come out and bring that play out. So Young gives it to Roger Craig, and I'll never forget the play. I mean, he steals the ball out of his arms. I mean, it was just such an incredible game. I think he hit another person. To me, yeah, I saw Gary Reasons, and I said, Gary, every time I think of you, I always think of you.
Next week, you know, 47-48 yard field goal is not an easy kick, but if he makes that, we very easily could have lost those two, but we won.
That's why you go back and think about what they're saying about special teams. To me, it seems like the teams don't respect like they should the field goal kicker. This guy. and losing games for so many teams that if you got a guy, you got one of these guys, give him the money. Don't let one of these guys leave, because there's not many of them. You would think, Sean, it would be easy to kick, but it's not.
No, and what you said before is so true. So many games, the talent is so close. You know, we're playing a team that's 2-8. Fans are telling us, oh, they stink, you'll win. Like, well, win. We know 6 of their 8 losses are by 5 points or less. We know if they'd have made a couple field goals or another guy didn't hit a 54-yarder, they have a winning record. So many of these games were so close. And I kicked in college. I wasn't good enough to be an NFL kicker, accurate enough. But I think the rule should be changed a little. No disrespect to kickers, but you got two teams playing for 3 hours, back and forth, a whole game. And this game's going to be won and lost on this one play by this one guy. I almost don't know if that's right. And again, not anything against the kicker, but these guys that have been playing 3 hours, let them battle it out, and you got to win by a touchdown. I mean, again, there's different ways of thinking of it, but it's almost like so everything comes down to that one swing of a leg, whether a team that played for 3 hours wins the game or not. And I know those are the rules, and that's how it goes. But pressure, like you said, there's a lot of people that want nothing to do with kicking, and they'll never admit it. The only reason they don't want to kick is they don't want to have to be in that position one day that when they fail, that happens. And it's such an unfair thing. You know, in college, I only had one opportunity with 1 second left to kick a game-winning field goal. Unfortunately, I made it. But all I could think about the next several days was like, you know, it's great if I made it, but if I didn't make that kick, it would be so awful. The low of not making it isn't even close, or the opposite. You know, the high of making it, well, first of all, when you make it, you're expected to make it. That's what you do. Right. We're sending you out here. What's your position? Right. Kicker.
Right.
Go make the field goal. You know, they have this phrase you hear people say, you know what? You only have one thing to do, one job. Well, you know what? That one thing to do isn't always so easy. You know, a left guard could get blown off 15 times in a game, but if the guy rushed the other way for 150, oh, your line was great. Nobody saw that guy get crushed 15 times.
You're right.
We see it on film the next day, but, you know, it's a very difficult position. And today, more than ever, you just have to have a good one.
Are you able to play that long?
A lot of luck. What I mean by that is, you know, there's not one thing, there's dozens of things. First of all, to get the opportunity. You get the opportunity to play. You hope you play well enough that they want you back. But even if they want you back, you still have to play better than those 2 or 3 guys in camp for 6 weeks.
Oh, it's good.
And, you know, you can be really good. I mean, play terrific. But that other guy might still be better. And you're out.
Or cheaper.
That's the part that I really got lucky with late in my career. It's probably in my 18th, 19th year, they moved the minimums for 10 years or more guys to around $750,000. The rookie minimum was around $300,000. And quite often, the guy in camp with you, even though he's not as good as you, he's good. He's very good. So you do that with one guy per position, keep the rookie instead of the 6-year backup and the big money. You know, that could be $3-4 million extra that you need to pay the quarterback. So I was very fortunate that I was on playoff teams basically for the last 7-8 years where even though I went to camp and won the job, they went with me, I think, because we were a playoff team where they could have gone with the cheaper guy. And it's a shame. Every year, there's 32 teams. There's 3-4 guys per team. You're talking 120 plus guys that are sitting at home that went to camp, won the job. They're the better player, and they're not playing. But that's the rule of the NFL today.
The economics of it.
Economics of it. Right, absolutely. It all comes into play. And
right, come down to money, finances.
So with that, I think we're wrapping it up. I just want to get this one thing out there. So I am a card-carrying member of Buckeye Nation. And before we had
Ohio State,
I went there for a little bit.
Oh, just a little bit, by the way.
Okay.
Tell the story.
Listen, you can claim it. You were there.
I was there. I stormed the field. I was there. before we had Day, and it was 6 months to end that story.
Hey,
you were the Larry's 2 weeks.
Right, 2 weeks of Urban College, right.
So we were there.
We've got Day now. We had Urban. Before that, we had Senator Trussell, Jim Trussell. One of his favorite quotes is, the most important part of the football game is the punt. So we'll just end it on that.
And I've heard a few other big-time coaches say that the phase they work on the most that has to be perfect is punt protection. Because I think I need to find out what the stat is, but it was a ridiculous stat. 80% of the time that a team had a punt blocked, yeah, they lost the game.
Yeah.
Wow. It's not a Urban Meyer.
He never lost the game that he blocked the punt.
He was one of them, and there's other coaches, Dick Vermeil, that say, everything's important, but that one phase has to be perfect, because statistically, if you have that happen to you, there's a higher chance of you losing than any other thing. Very interesting.
Yep. Okay, so that's a wrap on that 4K podcast, and we'll see you guys next week with a full episode of 4K Plans. It's nice of Sean to segue.
Thank you, Sean.
Great talking with you guys, and great to be here with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.